And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're with us. On Wednesday, Mayor Catherine Pugh released her plan to make Baltimore's streets safer. Her violence reduction plan takes a holistic approach to fighting crime. The mayor wants more training for police officers, increased access to housing and jobs, and free community college for Baltimore City Public School graduates. Critics say the mayor's plan lacks accountability and measurable goals. It comes on the heels of another plan to curb violence in Baltimore, offered up by City Councilman Brandon Scott, who chairs the council's Public Safety Committee. WIPR City Hall reporter Dominique Maria Benessi joins me now for a look at both plans. Dominique, it's good to see you.
Thank you, Tom.
And Professor Edward Jackson is with us as well. He teaches criminal justice at Baltimore City Community College. He's also a former Baltimore City Police Department colonel who retired from the department in 2004. He was recently appointed by Mayor Pugh to Baltimore City's Community Oversight Task Force. Ed Jackson, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. So, Dominique, tell us what the main elements of Catherine Pugh's approach to fighting crime and curbing this incredible uptick that we've had in violence over the last couple of years.
Right. So the mayor's plan is called a violence reduction update. And many from many of the reporters that were there said it reminded them of remnants of her campaign promises. And she even said, you know, when I came into office, I had a violence reduction plan already made. But now that I have smarter people around me, this is an updated plan that is more focused on what we can actually do. And she says that it puts more, at the same time, there are a lot of reporters saying it puts more emphasis on law enforcement. You know, a lot of them are saying that there are the benchmarks, she says, are actually going to be, you know, data driven. So when we start seeing reports, then, you know, we'll have this data by her city's stat office that they'll get and from the police department. You know, but, you know, again, she does want to make community college free for all Baltimore City public school students. She wants to include affordable housing for low and income middle families. And she also wants to include housing for the homeless in that. And there's also a large portion of her plan that will go into curbing the opioid epidemic, which are huge in our city. But again, as you know, as critics have said, as Brandon Scott has said, not many performance measures, not many benchmarks to say by this date we'll have this in place, or by this date we're going to have this in place. So a lot of unknowns here.
Dominique Maria Benessi reports on City Hall for WIPR. If you'd like to join our conversation about the mayor's plan, about Brandon Scott and the Public Service Committee's plan to curb violence in our city, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. We are also streaming this live on Facebook, so you can come to the WYPR Facebook page and check out what's happening here in Studio A. Ed Jackson, a lot of folks have pointed to the centrality of the police contract to being part of the problem when it comes to fighting crime in the city. The way the contract is currently set up and the changes that the contract need, changes that need to be made to fix it. What's your take on that?
Well, I have mixed, as a private citizen and a spectator as to what's occurring, I'm kind of mixed. I tell community groups all the time when I speak, and I do it quite often, my students, a lot of the protections that are in place for police were designed, at least theoretically, to give police certain protections. You can't ask cops to go out on the street and deal with problems they didn't create, social problems, poor families, drug addiction, mental illness, and the like, lack of education, lack of access to capital. Crime's going to occur when you have distressed neighborhoods and hopelessness. And you can't ask cops to go into those environments and take sole responsibility. First of all, they're not trained to. So to get back to your original question, when you look at the union and the contract and our law enforcement officer's Bill of Rights, they were designed to say, look, when we send these young men and women out there, if they come into conflict with the public, there are certain protections. You can't have it both ways. You can't ask them to go out there and keep law and order and not give them certain protections, because they didn't create many of these social problems and and social disorganization to begin with.
Yeah, and Dominique, it's not. It's in addition to protections, it's also a matter of sort of logistics, isn't it? With the shift schedules and stuff. I mean, the way police are deployed, when they are deployed, we have tremendous overtime cost for police. We have an understaffed police department. So both the mayor's plan and Councilman Scott's plan call for increasing the number of police officers. We do have a 70% increase in recruits currently in the police academy. The mayor talks about hiring retired officers to come and supervise. I mean, but are there specific recommendations for how the FOP contract with the city should be changed? I mean, was that a big part of this of the mayor's update?
From what I have read in the plan, I have not read any specific updates to that contract. You know, and another thing that you mentioned, another thing that, I mean, Brandon Scott seems very adamant about is having officers with the opening of the new cadet program in Baltimore, getting that pipeline of kids coming out of high school who are 18 years old and going into the cadet program. And, you know, that you can't actually become an officer till you're 21. So, you know, going to that program, being able to, you know, have that education. And once you graduate from that program, and if you're 21 or just about to be 21, you can become an officer. And having these kids from Baltimore policing their own communities. Now, that is Brandon Scott's plan. He would really like to see more community policing, more police from Baltimore policing in Baltimore.
And Ed Jackson, when I've talked to Commissioner Davis, he has said that one of the things that is certainly on his mind, back of mind, if not front of mind, is the average age of current Baltimore City police officers is pretty young. I mean, it's like already it's 24, 25. If Mr. Scott's vision is in effect, I mean, that could lower it even more. I mean, there is a certain maturity and a certain, you know, modicum of life experience that an officer has to have. I mean, you were on the street. You were, you know, you did this. How does it strike you that we might have a larger, albeit younger, police force?
It can work. I mean, you're right. As you were stating that to me, I realized how young I was when I had a badge and a gun. I was a couple of years removed from my teenage years. I was very immature. I look back on it now. I thought I was grown. And it's an awesome responsibility. You give a 22-year-old a badge and a gun and a 3,000-pound car and the authority, and we wonder why sometimes things go bad. They're still maturing. Their mind is still developing. They're still learning how to make rational decisions, but they get them young so they can socialize them properly and indoctrinate them, if you will, into the law enforcement community. That's the purpose of it. I like the cadet program. I never thought we should have done away with it because it gave young people an opportunity, something to look forward to in a city that really has very limited options in terms of industry. It helps them to appreciate, especially inner city residents, it helps them to appreciate the challenges of law enforcement. It helps them buy into what law enforcement's supposed to be about. And so in that sense, I think it's a great idea. You know, again, they got rid of it because of funding. And that's one of my major concerns, too. I love the idea that you're investing in young people's education because that's all a part of crime. I think what needs to be a part of the larger narrative, and that's what I like about the mayor's plan, is that we have to make investments in our community and our young people. We can't tell them to behave themselves and subscribe to the dominant values of society if they don't feel like they are part of it. That's, to me, that's common sense. And so we have to make those kind of investments. But my concern with the crime plan is that we need something more immediate. We're in crisis now. We had about 217 murders in a city that's only 620,000 in terms of population per capita, one of the highest in the country. So although I applaud the mayor's effort in terms of wanting to invest in our young people, create jobs, you know, give our young people something to look forward to, because crime is a big part about it is hopelessness. But at the same time, I would love to hear the commissioner articulate exactly what they're going to do to target the threats. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Target the people who are carrying guns.
Right.
And not do it through legislation. I mean, legislation has to go through a process, and then there's unintended consequences a lot of times if it's not well thought out. So we need to have men and women out there who are skilled enough to identify the threats. And then another big part real quickly, we need to talk more with our other agencies. There's a disconnect between the state's attorney's office. There's a disconnect between our federal partners. Nobody's talking to one another. The courts are out of sync with mm-hmm. the rest of the criminal justice system. So when you have that occurring, no matter what the mayor comes up with, it's not going to be successful, if I can be frank.
Ed Jackson is a former member of the Baltimore City Police Department. Dominique Maria Benessi reports on City Hall and matters of law enforcement for WYPR. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Dominique, the mayor also, in addition to addressing part of what Ed Jackson was talking about interagency collaboration, announced a couple of appointments. One is Drew Vetter. And he's going to now head the mayor's office on criminal justice, and is also as well. Kendra Parlock is going to replace Samir Seed, who was the head of the CityStat program. So tell us a little bit about these two folks.
So Drew Vetter used to be chief of staff for Kevin Davis in the police office. And every time you have a public safety committee hearing, he's the one who delivers pretty much all the stats on homicides, non-fatal shootings. He has, you know, a wealth of knowledge about what's going on with stats within the police and within crime in Baltimore. So obviously having him in the criminal justice office, the mayor sees that as a plus because he can deliver on those performance measures that she wants to see in her violence reduction update.
And he's a familiar face.
He is a familiar face to Baltimore.
The council has worked
exactly.
with. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Kendra Parlock is a Baltimore native. She has actually really reinventing both of these people, to be clear, are reinventing their offices. You know, both of these offices used to be more grant writing, used to be more getting funding for this, like federal grant funding for the city. And now they're working more towards, you know, actually helping supply statistics to the mayor to come up with data-driven solutions for the city. That's so they say.
Mm-hmm. And Ed Jackson, both of these plans, I mean, we should be careful. And Dominique, I know you spoke with Brandon Scott just yesterday. By the way, Brandon Scott's going to be our guest here on Midday on Tuesday, so we'll talk to him directly about this. But he certainly wants to be sure that people don't see these as competing proposals.
Right. He's definitely said to me, we need to work together on this. This is not something that, you know, we want this better, we want this better. It's something that we can work on together. He, I think, would just like to see that we're having benchmarks and performance measures in order to combat crime more efficiently.
One of the things that, and you alluded to this when you just made your comments a minute ago, Ed Jackson, but that there's the sort of long-term things like free community college, which could be a very excellent incentive for people to graduate and to, you know, continue their education. And then there's the short term, because we've got this 17% uptick. And we also have a clearance rate that is still abysmally low. It's way lower than the national average. Perhaps depending on how you calculate it, it might be as high as 50% now, but it was in the 30s, you know, not too long ago. Folks have often said the way to solve crime is to solve crime, meaning if you find the perpetrators of these crimes and you incarcerate them because they have done this, particularly the crimes involving guns, you're going to make the streets safer.
Exactly. And see, what's unfair, and here's where my former colleague should applaud me. You know, police often get blamed because they're the face of the criminal justice system. You know, you can go out and make a good case, do the best you can to remain in compliance with the United States Constitution, the Fourth Amendment in particular, seizing evidence appropriately, making arrests based on probable cause, writing a warrant, the whole nine yards. But if the courts doesn't see it the same way, then the person walks. And we have a lot of recidivism in Baltimore. I just learned today that one of the homicide suspects was just released for attempted murder, a matter of weeks ago. And so you can easily predict that he was going to offend again. If he did it before, if he did it many times in the past, and there was no real consequence from society for him doing so, why wouldn't he do it again?
Yeah, 60% of convicted felons have their sentences reduced.
Reduced, right.
And there's one, in some cases, they were arrested for the third time. There were seven people who have been arrested three times mm-hmm. for gun crimes mm-hmm. who just keep being released to the streets.
Streets, that's right. And my frustration is, even with the Oversight Task Force, I'm not frustrated with them. I'm working with some wonderful people. Let me clear that up. But one of the things that I often articulate when we meet, and we've met a few times now, is that we have to have meaningful outcomes. I get frustrated because statistics and meetings and, you know, people are dying, and they die one at a time, and each victim has a story, each family grieves, and I don't think that it's appropriate At this time to talk about statistics, we need a real action plan to say this is how we're going to target them. Keeping in mind that it's a tough job right now. We're 2 years out from the Freddie Gray, the civil unrest as a result of Freddie Gray. There's a great distrust between the police. You have the Justice Department looking over their head to make sure that officers are in compliance with the Constitution.
The consent decree.
Yes, sir. And then we're asking cops to go out and solve this. You have to engage the community. In order to solve crime, I was a detective once. In order to solve crime, you have to engage the community. And you have to engage the community in a way that's respectful, but at the same time, you have to let the community know that you're about justice and about business. Nowadays, you got to be, it's real tricky. You know, things can be easily misconstrued to being overly aggressive. So in the absence of that, you know, you have a lot of cops out there who are afraid to really engage, and that's a big problem, too.
And, of course, we had the governor just yesterday taking a tour of State Center, which is another whole can of worms, with Mayor Pugh, but also talking about meeting with judges and other political leaders to talk about why so many of these convicted felons are released back to the street. But, Dominique, how have both of these plans been received? I mean, there's some similarities. There's a few little sort of minor differences. But generally speaking, you know, there was a lot of pressure on Catherine Pugh to release something in writing. I mean, you had Baltimore's United Leadership Development, you know, saying, where's the plan? Where's the plan? Well, now they got a plan. I mean, do you think folks are appeased?
That I'm uncertain of yet. You know, I think many people, for example, for one, Brandon Scott was happy that the mayor's plan did address the violent repeated offenders, as we were saying. So those who have already committed a crime of violence with a gun most likely will be targeted with this new plan. And even within the new gun bill that they're passing, the legislation in this gun bill is trying to target violent repeated offenders of handgun crimes.
All right, that's all the time we have for it today. As I mentioned, on Tuesday, we're going to take up this subject once again. But Dominique Maria Benessi, I appreciate it. Ned Jackson as well, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right, Edward Jackson is a retired Baltimore City Police Colonel. He teaches criminal justice at Baltimore City Community College. Dominique Maria Benessi is WIPR's City Hall reporter. We'll have links to the anti-violence plans from both Mayor Pugh and the Public Safety Committee on our website, wypr.org/midday. It is midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.